When wishes were horses and beggars could ride, in a stone castle by the sea there lived a rich laird.
What am I supposed to choose? There are so many.
And so he left the trail, and he followed the sound of the music.
I am the goat from the hills and the mountains. And when I have finished eating these herbs and these vegetables, then I shall eat you, too.
Once upon a time, and welcome to the Story Story podcast. I'm your host, Isabel Hauser, and I have some stories for you. I'm stepping in for Rachel Ann, who is away taking a master class on diving without scuba, run by the mermaids in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. This is a podcast for your traditional stories told by some of the best storytellers in the world. It will take you to long ago and far away, and will bring you back safely. Autumn is on our doorstep. There was a crisp in the air this morning that hadn't been there yesterday, and wafts of mist were caught in the treetops that only just sported their richest green. Every day fades into the night a bit earlier than the one before, and the evenings are aglow with candlelight and the nostalgia for things that are yet to come. A few nights ago, I had just climbed into bed with a book and a steaming cup of tea when the power went out. What choice did I have but to dig up my torch and climb up to the attic where the fuse box was installed? The narrow steps creaked under my feet, and I ducked my head to avoid the cobwebs that I couldn't see in the dark, using the beam of light to pick my way through the sprinkles of mouse droppings. Now, where was that fuse box? The light fell on long-forgotten suitcases, boxes stuffed with childhood memories, wardrobes that housed spare clothes that presumably housed fat moths, and a parcel. Leaning against an old wardrobe at the back of the attic was a parcel, a bit larger than a binder, wrapped in musty cloth. I had never seen it before and couldn't imagine just how it had gotten there. Countless dust motes danced in the light as I picked the parcel up and unwrapped what looked like a painting in rather obscure colors, set in an old gilded frame. I couldn't see it properly, so I took the painting down to my apartment, the fuse box long forgotten. By the candlelight in my living room, I examined the painting more closely. It depicted a scene in stunning detail. A lake, much like the one I could see from my window, glowing from the inside in the last light of day. Tall, dark trees lined its shore, and there, with her back turned to the observer, a young woman was looking out onto the water. The hem of her dress was damp from the grass that she was standing in, and wisps of unruly curls had escaped her long plait. It was such a piece of art that I could almost smell the cold rising from the depths of the lake. Looking at this scene, a strange heaviness settled on my shoulders and in my heart, so I set the painting down and went to bed. As my head touched the pillow, I fell fast asleep and dreamed the strangest dream. The stories for this episode are all about cunning creatures and clever boys. The first story is brought to you by Priscilla Howe. Priscilla is a storyteller from Kansas who, according to one of her listeners, quietly but firmly conquers her audience's heart. She has been telling stories for many years in 14 countries and 4 continents. From her CD, The Best and Worst of Beasts, this is her telling Anansi and the Turtle.
Do you know about Anansi the Spider? Well, he was a tricky, tricky spider. Sort of a man, sort of a spider. One day, Anansi made a big stew. Oh, Anansi loved to eat. He loved, loved, loved to eat. So he made a big, big stew to eat. It was cooking, and it smelled delicious, and he was just about to give himself a big bowl of it when along came Turtle. Turtle was far from her home, and she said, Anansi, Anansi, I'm very hungry. Could I have some of your stew? Anansi never liked to share. He said, Turtle, yes, of course you can have some stew. In Nigeria, quite often, if you go to someone's house, they give you something to eat. Always. Well, Anansi didn't want to share. But, Turtle, you can have some stew, but look at you. Your feet are filthy. Your hands are filthy. Your face is filthy. Go down to the river and wash first. So Turtle walked all the way down the dusty path to the river. She washed her feet. She washed her hands. She washed her face. And then she walked all the way back up the dusty path to where Anansi was finishing his first bowl of stew. Oh, Turtle, nice to see you. Anansi, Anansi, could I have some food? I'm so hungry. Oh, Turtle, you can have some food, but look at you. Your feet are filthy, your hands are filthy, your face is filthy. Go down to the river and wash first. It's not polite. Turtle walked all the way down the dusty path to the river. She washed her feet, she washed her hands, she washed her face, then she walked all the way back up the dusty path where Anansi was finishing his second bowl of stew. Oh, it's so good. Oh, Turtle, hello. Anansi, please, I'm so hungry. Could I have some food? Anansi said, look at you. Your feet are filthy, your hands are filthy, your face is filthy. Go down to the river and wash. Turtle walked all the way back down the dusty path to the river. She washed her feet, she washed her hands, she washed her face, and this time she walked back up the long way through the grass so that when she arrived, her feet were clean, her hands were clean, her face was clean. But I'll tell you also that Anansi's pot and his bowl were also clean. There was no food left. Turtle said, Anansi? Anansi said, I'm so sorry. There's none left. You were so slow. Turtle said, oh, I guess I'll go then. And Turtle went on her way. But the next week, she invited Anansi to her house, which was way down the river in the water. Anansi was excited. He put on his best jacket. Ooh-hoo, party! He loved a party. He always loved a party. There's gonna be food. There's gonna be dancing. Ooh, I love a party. So he went down to the river, way down the river, where he knew that Turtle lived. He was ready. He jumped on the water, and he skittered around, and he skittered around, and he skittered around, and he couldn't sink down because he didn't weigh enough. He jumped out on the bank, and Turtle came swimming up. Come on, Anansi. We're going to eat now. Anansi said, oh, don't, save some food for me. Turtle said, huh, of course, but hurry up. And so Turtle swam back down in the river, and Anansi jumped onto the water, but he skittered around, and he skittered around, and he skittered around. He just was not heavy enough to sink down in the water. He jumped back out. Oh, Turtle came swimming up. Anansi, we already started. You know, you're late. Anansi said, oh, please, save some food for me. Is there music? Is there dancing? Turtle said, oh, yes, there's music, there's dancing. But hurry up, the food's almost gone. Oh, Anansi didn't know what to do. Turtle swam back down, and Anansi looked around. He saw some rocks. He put them in his pockets of his best jacket, and then he jumped on the water, and now he was heavy enough to go straight down to the bottom. Ah, there was food. There were other guests. There was Turtle. Anansi was just reaching out for a little bit of the yams that were on the plate, and Turtle said, "Anansi, have some manners. You don't wear your jacket inside the house." So Anansi took off the jacket, and without the weight of those rocks, he went whoop right back up to the surface of the water. And he jumped out on the bank. And you know as well as I do that Anansi got just as good as he gave. And that's the story of Anansi and Turtle.
Today's fairy tale sponsor is Three Wishes Prudential. Have you ever been tempted to squander a precious wish on a folly instead of your true heart's desire? Don't let this happen again and sign up for a counseling session at Three Wishes Prudential. We are the leading experts at curbing enthusiasm and steering clear of disaster, all in good cheer and with a firm hand. Book your appointment today by calling 375-HELP-ME-NOW or drop into our agency on Treasury Lane. Three Wishes Prudential, ensuring that you end up happily ever after and not with a sausage stuck to your nose. For this episode, we have not only one patron, but two. Jada and her daughter, Liberty. Now, I was going to tell you about their magical power, which is that the hands of this girl power duo make flowers grow wherever they touch the ground. But just now, a magpie tapped on my window. Jada and Liberty, I have a personal message for the two of you. The magpie left something sparkly and precious on your windowsill as a thank you for supporting this podcast. Go get it quickly before the gnomes beat you to it. And please do let us know what it was. And if you, dear listener, want to be in for a chance to receive magical bird-borne presents as well, or if you want to learn about your own magical power too, you can, for as little as $4 a month. A big thank you to all the patrons who make this podcast possible. You are the spoonful of sugar to our cup of tea. In my dream, I was walking up the narrow stairs to the attic once more. But no, not walking. Hurrying, scrambling, running. And although hurried, my steps fell silently on the stairs. There was no need to duck the cobwebs. The stairs were swept clean, and I knew that not a grain of dust would cling to the hem of my dress once I got back down. No one would be able to tell that I had been up there. And although I knew that there was no danger of encountering mice, my heart was hammering in my chest. One clammy hand was clutching a candle, the other was hugging the parcel to my chest, the smell of paint barely dried still in my nose. My eyes darted from one dark corner to the other, trying to make out the best hiding place in the half-light somewhere. Anywhere. Sounds came from below. My heart almost leapt from my throat. There was no more time. My eyes fell on the wardrobe at the back of the attic. There. A few strides, and I gently put the parcel down, running my fingers one last time over the cloth. "Goodbye," I whispered. "Please be safe." And then a bang, and I woke with a start, and for a moment, I did not know where I was. I rubbed my eyes and found myself in my bedroom, familiar in all its ordinarity. The first light of day was seeping through the curtains. I got up and opened the window, my head spinning. I took a deep breath of the crisp, clear morning air and another one. Oh, that was better. What a peculiar dream that was. Well, dreams could be just anything, I thought to myself, shaking my head as if to shake off the strange feeling. On my way to the kitchen, I stumbled over something. It was the painting. The painting that I could have sworn I had left in the living room before I went to bed. But there it was, in the hallway, on the ground. Once again, the scene drew me in. The lake glowed in the morning light, though the trees lining its shore were still dark. And then my heart stopped. The woman in the painting, the woman had turned around and was looking me straight in the eye. Richard Martin is the second teller in this episode. He has been featured on the podcast before, and we are delighted to have him back. Richard is a storyteller from England who has spent the past couple of decades in Germany. And if you'd not only like to hear him, but see him tell a story too, you can find videos of his recordings on Vimeo. Just follow the links on storystorypodcast.com. And this is him telling The Gentleman King.
Weeks ago when I met a story from Ireland, and this was, of course, an old story. And in those days, Ireland had many kingdoms divided up. And that meant, of course, they had many kings. But what they didn't have were gentlemen. Do we have anyone from Ireland here tonight? Just in case it's very different now. Each and everyone is a gentleman. But in those days, it wasn't. And no idea of gentlemanly behaviour. They would be shouting and swearing, punching and kicking. And worst of all, they would actually call each other a liar. That gentleman doesn't do that. No. But so it was in Ireland, except for one man. And he actually was the king down in the south, in the kingdom of Munster. And that king, he really prided himself on being a gentleman. None of this shouting and swearing and never, ever calling somebody a liar. No, no. In fact, he was so proud of his gentleman behaviour that after a while he began to think, really? I must be the greatest gentleman in the world. And when that idea came into his mind, of course, it began to grow. And from that pride grew vanity. And he said, a gentleman such as myself, if any man can prove that I am not a gentleman, if anyone can provoke me into calling him a liar, why, that man may marry my daughter. And have half the kingdom too. I mean, that's what people said in those days, wasn't it, if they were a king? So that's in those days. Just in case any of you men ever have the opportunity of an offer like that, the princess's hand in marriage and half the kingdom too, take a tip from me. Read the small print very well. Do we have anyone here who actually reads the small print in a contract? One person here, very, very good, yeah. But they didn't in Ireland. And as soon as people heard of this, they started coming. There were the knights and the nobles, the kings and the chiefs, the princes and scholars. They flooded in. And, of course, they had not heard the small print of the contract, which was, you can guess, anyone who tries and fails, off with you gasp. Yeah, they gasped as well when they found out. But it was too late, wasn't it? Very soon, the King of Munster, in front of his castle, he had a large ring of wooden stakes set up in the garden. 365 stakes. And on 364, you've guessed it, a head. Now, that was all down in the south of Ireland. But up in the north of Ireland, up in the mists and the mountains of Donegal, There, in a small little cabin, of course, lived an old woman with her son, Jack. Now, when Jack heard, the princess's hand in marriage and half the kingdom to, oh, mother, this is the chance for me. I'm going to go, I'm sure I can do it. You, Jack, who's been nowhere, who's learned nothing, how can you succeed where all of them, the knights and the nobles, the kings and the chiefs, the princes and scholars, have failed? Oh, stay here, my son. But I know we've got some mothers here. Which of you, when your teenage boy says, I must go out, could say no? And so it was with Jack. Soon he was making his way down south until he came to Munster. It was the king himself opened the gates to the castle. Ooh. Who are you and where are you from and why have you come? I am Jack. Up there in Donegal, that's where I come from. And I'm down here because of your daughter's hand in marriage. Jack, tell me, did you notice anything as you came to the castle? Yes, I saw those stakes. 364 heads I counted. Yeah. And there's one stake left. Now, it'd be a pity and a shame, Jack, if you completed the serpent. Why don't you go home now and keep your head on your shoulders? Well, Jack, he looked round at those heads and he did notice that none of them looked particularly happy. And I think he might have indeed gone and returned if it hadn't been at that moment. A window high in the castle wall opened and out looked a young girl. Oh, a young girl with a smile went straight to his heart and he said, I shall stay. Well, if you're sure, but since I like the look of you, Jack, I'll give three chances to see whether you can provoke me into calling you a liar. Now, before we begin, let me take you to my horses. I'm rather proud of them. I think you'd be interested. And the king took Jack round the back of the castle to the stables where he showed Jack 365 horses standing in 365 stalls. And each and every one of those horses was 19 hands high. Jack looked up at them. Of course, Donegal all his life, he'd not seen much of the world. But he knew when he was walking down that he'd have to say what he had to say. So he said, not bad little ponies. But of course they don't really compare with the horses at home, which my father has. Oh, you must tell me about those, Jack. Well, I'll tell you about the little one which I had for myself, a little pony, you see. But it was 19 miles high. And the only way I could mount that was with a ladder. And between the rungs of the ladder, that was half a mile too. What do you think to my little pony? And Jack looked up at the king and saw the king smile, a gentlemanly smile. Chance number one. Gone. Well, Jack, interesting to hear about that. But before we go any further, let me show you my bees. Now, you might not think so much of my horses, but my bees I'm rather proud of. Come with me. And the king took Jack round to where the beehives were. And there were, of course, as by now you know, 365 beehives, each one as large as this theatre. And the bees flying around, each one the size of a goose. Yeah, Not bad little midges, said Jack. But of course they don't really compare with the bees my father has at home. Oh, you must tell me about that, Jack. Well, I can just mention the queen bee which my father has. You see, that bee, we always have to keep her chained up, because if she escapes, why, the wind from her wings knocks over the trees, takes the roofs off the houses. Once she did escape, flew over to Scotland. The King of Scotland, who was in such despair, he sent a message to my father, we must come with our army to capture the Queen Bee and bring her back home. Well, our soldiers were fighting in the four corners of the world. I could not get many of them together. Just 199,999 soldiers, I remember. I led them, riding my little pony, 19 miles high. We went to the coast to cross over the sea to Scotland. When we got there, we found there were no boats. My pony thrashed with his hooves so much that the waters parted and we could walk over to Scotland without getting our shoes wet. Once there, we borrowed 9,000 miles of chain. At last, we captured the bee, dragged her back, and there she is now in her hive. So what do you think to that, King? And Jack saw a very gentlemanly smile. Interesting story. I'm glad to hear about that. Yes. But... as Jack realised, chance number two. Before we go any further, let me take you to my beans. Now, you may not be so impressed with my horses or my bees, but my beans, I'm rather proud of them. I think you'll find them of interest. And the King took Jack behind the castle to where the beanstalks were growing, each one as tall as the castle. Each leaf as large as a table. Each bean as big as the King's head. What do you think to my beans, Jack? Well, not bad as little peas. But of course, they don't really compare with the beans which my father grows at home. Oh, you must tell me about that. Well, I mentioned one which was so tall, the beanstalk, we did not know how tall it was. It went right through the clouds. But when we harvested, we would send 900 men climbing up that beanstalk. They started at Easter. They harvested in September. And they were back down in time for their Christmas dinner. And as Jack saw the gentlemanly smile begin to grow, he said, yeah, before long, I wanted to travel and see the world. I begged my father for permission to climb up the beanstalk myself. I climbed 999 miles until suddenly I slipped. I began to fall and I fell for 5 months. The speed I had achieved when I hit the solid rock, I went right down through until only my head was standing, showing outside. I called for help. Nobody came. After a while, I was so fed up with this, I took a knife out of my pocket, cut off my head, and sent my head back home to ask for help. But as I saw my head going across the field, why, out from behind a bush, suddenly a fox came and began to bite my head and bite. I was so angry at that. I grabbed myself with both hands and pulled myself out of the rock. I ran across the field and I kicked that fox so hard. And do you know, with each kick, out came a king who was a greater and a finer gentleman than you. A finer gentleman than me? That's not true. That's a bloody lie. See, Jack, he had seen that vanity. He had been playing the king until he got him where he wanted him. And when the king calmed down a little bit, Jack said, "Yes, yes, yes. A liar I am, and a pretty good one too. But I also reckon I'm going to be the son-in-law of the greatest gentleman in the world." And when the princess came down and put a hand round Jack's waist and said he was the only one I would have married anyway, then the king agreed. But of course, before they could have the wedding, Jack had to return to Donegal, where he brought back his old mother. And at last, the wedding could be celebrated. And they celebrated for 99 days and nights. And do you know, each one was better than the one before. And that is the end of my tale. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Story Story podcast. Show the love. Find Priscilla Howe and Richard Martin on the internet. Tell them you heard them on the podcast and now want to hear them tell more stories. You can find Rachel Ann and the podcast on Facebook and Instagram at Story Story Podcast or rachelannharding.com. And you can find me at isabelhauser.com. Check out the ads for the fairy tale sponsors and let us know the favorite story you have heard or the favorite stories of your childhood. Who knows? Maybe you will hear them here soon. The beautiful brains behind the fairy tale sponsor is Orla McGovern. The inspiration for the true fairy tale was a story seed from Laura Packer. You can find her lovely story and writing prompts by looking her up on social media. This podcast is made possible by patrons like you. If you would like to become a supporter of the podcast or discover sponsorship opportunities, you can find links on storystorypodcast.com. If it isn't in the cards to support the podcast right now, no worries. Perhaps you would be willing to go write a review on Apple Podcasts, which helps other story lovers find and enjoy the podcast. Head on over to the website and join the mailing list for hidden goodies. And if you tune in, you will hear more stories next week. Maybe Rachel Ann will even tell us whether she has found a sunken treasure on the bottom of the ocean. And perhaps at some point in the future, you'll hear myself hosting another episode of the Story Story podcast. But until then, live happily ever after.
Mary Kate opened up the door, and there, on the doorstep, wrapped in his own blanket, was her baby.
And to this day, Anansi spins webs so that he can catch the flea, the fly, and the moth that got away.
If you go down to the lake on a clear day, when the water lies as calm as a sheet of glass, you can still see the rooftops of the castle glittering in the sunlight. And if you listen really closely, you can even hear the festive music.